I'm Cherie Sutran, and you're listening to the NCRA Homelessness Marathon on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from the Megaphone Magazine offices in the downtown east side. We are broadcasting from the traditional ancestral unceded territories of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Squamish people in Vancouver. For podcasts, full-length interviews, and more information, visit CITR.ca. I am here with my co-host, Eva Ugrensenge, and she will be explaining more about why we're here tonight.
Hi, this is Eva. So we're here to talk about the annual Homelessness Marathon. The yearly overnight broadcast is shared on campus and community stations from coast to coast across Canada. And the marathon began in 1998 in Geneva, New York. This year, the marathon is broadcasting from Abbotsford CIVL station at 101.7 FM. The concept moved north to Canada 13 years ago with C-Cut FM in Montreal as the host station, and it was hosted by McGill University for 11 years. This is the first time that it's been coordinated by a British Columbia station. We're broadcasting from Megaphone Magazine, which is an organization that has more than 40 vendors selling the magazine. Many of the vendors struggle with various barriers, homelessness, addiction, or a mental illness. And selling the paper gives the vendors a voice in their community and raises their self-esteem. So we have one of those vendors with us here today. His name is Chris Kronk, and he'll be speaking with me right now. Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you tonight?
Good. So why did you decide to come down here and talk to us about Megaphone?
Because being homeless made my life the happiest it's ever been, and I just wanted to come down and share that.
So, why'd you say that? Why would you say like homelessness made you the happiest you've ever been? What do you want to explain to people?
Well, 7 years ago, I had a couple of surgeries on my spine, and my family had dissolved. Everything had gone bad, and I was panhandling down in front of a Tim Hortons, and I'd given up everything, given up every reason to live. I didn't care, and. So I went up and I started to panhandle there because I knew if I went down to the east side that it would be easy for me to survive down there. It would be a lot harder to survive around the civilians, as I used to put it, you know, the normal people who went to work every day. It would be a lot harder for me to get along up there. And I didn't want happiness, I thought. Because I could have survived on the east side. And a woman come by one day and told me that things were going to be good. And one day that I would get up off the ground, I was sitting on the sidewalk, and she could see it in my face. And that day changed my life. And if I hadn't have been sitting at that chair at that time, being homeless, down and out, ready to die, I wouldn't be so happy and secure and blessed as I am today.
And when she said that to you, where did you go from there?
Well, you know, and she would always come by and buy me a coffee and encourage me on her way to work, because I would always sit at the same spot. And I began to think to myself, you know, I need to act on this, you know, and to prove something to her. I wanted to make her right, let her know she was right. And so I picked up and started to sell the Megaphone paper on the corner. Mm-hmm. And my life started to get better
and
for a while.
What did it mean for you to sell the magazine? What was important about that?
I had somewhere to go every day. I treated it like a job. I invested my little bit of money I had. I would invest in the paper, and I had a job. I had somewhere to go, and I felt welcome up there. And I mean, it took a little bit of time, a little bit of perseverance, but eventually I felt welcome and just at home selling the paper, and my personality began to shine.
Was there difficulties in selling the paper? Is it hard to get started?
Well, you do a lot of stuff under your breath, and you just got to be patient and smiley and humble. You got to humble yourself and understand, you know, the civilians of the world, and try to understand their outlook on life and how they look at me as they're walking down the street.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any memorable experiences of people that you met that way?
Well, the job I have today, I met him through Megaphone. I mean, he walked past me for 2 years without ever saying a word to me. And then one day at Christmas, he come and he bought the paper off me with a bag full of change. And then he would come by and talk to me every day and give me a $20 bill for the paper, and he just kept coming by. And for 2 years, he didn't say a word. And then one day he looked at me and said, "Hey, I'm practically giving you a paycheck now. You might as well come work in my shop." And he's a reputable goldsmith here in town, and I'm learning about gold and stuff. And
mm-hmm. So a big part of doing this broadcast is to raise awareness about homelessness and talk about the stigmas surrounding it. What's something that you think is important for people to know about what being homeless is like? What's something that people get wrong?
That we're all drug addicts, that we're all manipulative, we're all looking for a freebie, we're all looking for a way in without paying the toll.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not all like that. We're not all chasing the dragon. You know, some of us are chasing a glass of milk for our craft dinner. You know, some of us are looking for, you know, a half decent burger instead of, you know, soup line soup. You know, you go to a place where they serve soup for breakfast, and as you're leaving, you can see all the spots where the soup ended up. If you understand what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it just, people need the real food. People need that butter for their craft dinner. You ever had craft dinner without margarine? You know. And then we're not all down there, you know. We need money. We mm-hmm. we need a couple of dollars, nutrition-wise.
You were talking before about how you came down to the downtown east side because you knew you could survive there. What is it about the downtown? Did you find a sense of community here? Or what was it about that helped you survive?
Well, on the east side, it would have been too easy for me. I mean, everything is easy down there. I mean, you don't have to work for nothing. Everything is brought to you. Everything is delivered to you on a platter. I mean, there's so many outreach workers. There's so many cars pulling over. I mean, down there, you can survive on nothing. You don't need anything. I went up and started panhandling because I didn't know how to deal with that kind of person. And I thought it would be harder for me in my life. I might come to different choices if I had to live in that atmosphere.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what do you still face some of that stigma now, or do you talk to people about being homeless before?
Oh, I through selling Megaphone and stuff, I got to know some professors at BCIT and language instructors and stuff like that. And I eventually, there was a lot of turmoil between students and panhandlers in the neighborhood around Dunsmuir and Seymour. And so I had a handbook, and I wanted to ease the tension. So an instructor lady I knew helped me start a class, and I called it Street Smarts 101, and I was able to talk to the language kids about panhandlers and about me and how I started and where I am today. And it eased tensions on the corner. You know, after that, it was more, hi, Chris. They'd come by, and it was a lot. The tensions were eased so much in those few classes that I taught. And, yeah.
What was it like teaching a class, being a teacher?
It was good. I mean, there were language students, and there was a little bit of a difficulty. But afterwards, like I say, when I'd be back out there selling the Megaphone, that's when I realized that they did get something out of it. They changed the way they looked at me and the way they would look at other panhandlers and just street people in general.
Mm-hmm. Is that something you're still doing, or is that over now?
Oh, no, the class, I stopped doing that about a year ago.
Mm-hmm. So now you've got a job with this goldsmith. Do you have any plans, or are you happy with kind of where you're at right now?
Oh, I'm shooting for the stars now. I'm going to have a few molds made up this year. I'm going to start selling a bit of jewelry. I hope to learn more about casting jewelry. I want to eventually know it all and learn it all and make some jewelry.
And looking back, how important was Megaphone in making that happen?
I wouldn't be who I am. I wouldn't be alive if it weren't for Megaphone. I would have died in that alley a long time ago from some kind of overabundance of myself.
All right. Well, thanks very much for talking with us, Chris.
No, thank you.
You are listening to the NCRA Homelessness Marathon on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the Megaphone Magazine offices in the downtown east side. I'm Madeline Taylor. I'm here with a whole bunch of folks from CITR and a whole bunch of folks from Megaphone. And we're broadcasting from the traditional ancestral unceded territories of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Squamish people here in Vancouver. So the song you just heard was B.B. King, The Thrill Is Gone, and that was a request from Chris Kronk, who is one of the people we've been interviewing today, and we've got some more of that with Lucy Clarkson. So,
hi there, everybody. My name is Lucy Clarkson. I'm the CITR Student Programming Coordinator at UBC, and I'm here back with Chris Kronk because we want to hear a little bit more about some of your stories here. We heard a little bit of an overview of your experiences with Megaphone. But I think you were mentioning how there's so much more to your story here. You said over the past 7 years, you've had quite an experience. A lot has changed. And so you started off selling Megaphone, but you had to take a bit of a break. Can you tell me a little bit more about what's going on there?
Yeah. I began selling Megaphone, and my life was improving. I was coming off of my painkillers after my surgeries. I mean, I was still doing a little bit of drugs, but my life was getting together slowly. And then when I think everything was okay, I come home one day and I get a letter telling me that my kids were put into foster care. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I, being in the shape I was in, I didn't know how I could help. I didn't know what I was going to do. My life was just getting better. I didn't want to change anything, but I couldn't turn my back. And so I tucked my tail and I jumped on the ferry and I went to see what I could do, knowing the shape I was in was not going to be impressive. And I spent a year there and with a lot of tough road to walk while I was there. And finally the kids got back with their mom and I came back to Vancouver. But while I was there, the social workers made me realize how their view of me was wasn't favorable. And when I was coming back, I realized that I needed the world to look at me differently. And when my kids got older, I wanted them to have a version of me that wasn't what the social worker or their mother was going to tell them how I was looking when I first got there. So when I come back, I knew I needed to change the way. I didn't know how I was going to do it, but the world needed to look at me differently. And I think that one going over there, as scared as I was the only selfless act I ever committed in my whole life. Everything I'd ever done was a selfish thing. It was always for me. And doing that was the very first selfless thing I'd ever done. And I come back. I didn't know how I was going to change it. And I started to sell Megaphone again. And with encouragement from Sean and the people here at the paper, I began to write. I began to get involved a little bit more with the paper, getting my voice out, and the people in downtown Vancouver. Sean told me it was going to be hard to make any money down there. They're tough people to have to deal with, and I was so shocked that they after a very short time, they welcomed me in. And when I started to write and express myself, and they just supported me throughout my time down there. Anything I wanted to do, they supported me. I wanted to do a class. I was selling my paper one day, and the language schools take kids around, do little tours. And I hear the tour guide tell them, don't talk to panhandlers. They're all drug addicts. They're all getting enough money from the government. Don't talk to them. And I was offended, and I told him that. And I knew an instructor lady, and I said, something's got to give here. This ain't right. And so I was able to teach a class and talk to the kids about what it was to be a panhandler and how things were different. And everything I wanted to do, I just mentioned a blog one day, and I told the instructor at BCIT, if a dog can have a blog, so can I. 2 days later, he had my blog set up for me, and so I began, lucidcity.ca was my blog. And they were just there to support me all the way, and I couldn't believe it. And after a year or two, things started to get even better, and people were just there for me. And you always hear how people are cold, and they're on their way to work, and they're just cold people. But they take the time. If you put in the time, they'll take the time. They're curious. They want to know what's going on. And I think the media and everybody tries to keep us apart. They want the normal people to think that all the panhandlers are this way, and they want the panhandlers to think everybody up there is that way. And it's to separate us. We need to get together. We need to get together and see the value that's in all of us. I mean, I met some people down there, very, very well-to-do people who I've learned some stuff. And that makes me realize they're just like me, because they make dumber mistakes than I have, And just getting a camaraderie and first name, and I began to feel like human, like I was human again, and that I could change the way the world looked at me. And then one day, one of my customers came up to me and offered me a job. So I took it, and shortly after, Bill comes to me and he says, I recommended you for this job. And right at that point is when I realized that I had changed the way the world was looking at me. Bill recommended me for this job at a goldsmith's. I mean, they got to be looking at me different than I ever looked at myself before. And I realized it was happening. And realizing what was going on in my life helped me continue to grow and to be here with you guys.
And it's incredible to hear that you gave yourself an opportunity to ask for help, or not even help, but just put it out there in the open, and people gave you an opportunity to make that happen. And so you were talking a little bit about how people saw you, and how did you feel that your feelings towards other people changed?
Well, just like I say, I always thought that they were the civilians. They didn't know what it was to live a hard life. They were the cattle that went back and forth to work. And I never realized the same as, I used to tell them all the time, as a panhandler, there's a little boy out there who thinks of me as Uncle Chris and remembers me as Uncle Chris and all the great things when I used to take him skating. And if you saw me today sitting here panhandling, he would still feel the same way. That's Uncle Chris. And I want everybody to know that's Uncle Joe over there, aunts, somebody's little niece, is always going to love him, and that we're people. And just to realize there are people out there that care about us, and we're worthwhile.
Absolutely. And remove this us and them and separation.
That's right.
Of that circumstance. Absolutely. And you were mentioning too before that you do quite a bit of writing now since being involved with Megaphone. So what's your experience been around that?
Oh, geez. I think I've had about 8 or 9 different things published. I've spoken at the Writers Festival a couple years in a row. I've done a few workshops, Café du Soleil, I did a reading there. And yeah, I just write.
Right. Yeah. And you mentioned your first piece was in Megaphone as well. What was that all about?
Well, the first piece that I wrote for Megaphone was a poem that I had written in the year 2000. And I'd never written anything before in my life. And I was in prison at the time, and I was going through a language barrier. And the year 2000 was coming upon, and they had a contest, what the year 2000 means to you. And you could write something, paint a picture, whatever you wanted. And 98% of the population didn't really speak much English. And so I said to myself, you know, I'm going to write a poem, and I'm going to show these people. And I wrote it in 15 minutes, and I ended up winning the contest, an English French poetry contest with an English poem, and it was posted all over the prison.
Talk about defying the odds.
And that was when I realized for the first time that I could do anything. If I can do this, and that's how I survived, was a poem. And it's, you can still see it on the internet. It's on that French website, the only English thing there.
There, yeah.
But I knew I could do anything after that. I knew.
Absolutely. And what do you think has been your biggest accomplishment over the last few years? You could point at just one.
Keeping the job I got for a whole year. I go every day, and keeping a steady thing like that has never been part of my life. I've traveled since I was 18, bounced back and forth across Canada, every shelter you can think of, from Seton House in Toronto, you know, all over. I lived in the streets of Montreal, and I forget what I was talking about.
So the consistency of your job is a really great accomplishment.
Yeah, and just being and wanting to go there and not looking for that quick, like being trusted enough to be up there has really changed who I think I am. Because there was a time when I couldn't be trusted with your dog, you know, so.
And now you get to be one of those cattle that goes to work every morning.
That's right. It's a lovely thing, isn't it?
What a fantastic to be on the other side now.
Cabbage rolls and coffee.
Fantastic. And so I think we're going to be playing another two. Thank you so much for joining us today.
No, I appreciate you having me here.
Do you have any last stories that you want to share with the world or with Canada? It's the world. I went a little far there.
No,
that's, we got enough stories. Well, you can always look up Chris Kronk. It's K-R-I-S, am I right on that? And then C-R-O-N-K. So look him up and find his poem. Check it out.